This is Breakfast with Dan and Jenny on ABC Newcastle.
You often hear that dredging up the past leads to no good. But there are plenty of good reasons to examine what has happened in the past, including putting right some wrongs, or at least recognising and hearing stories of pain and marginalisation. The state government recently announced an inquiry into gay hate and transgender hate crimes between 1970 and 2010.
The Premier has said that those crimes, represent one of the darkest times in our recent history. And he said, where there is still work to be done to address these injustices, we will do it. This is the first step to address them. A criminologist at the University of Newcastle has been researching the experiences of Newcastle's LGBTQ plus community and their experiences specifically with police from 1950 to 1980. And he's watching closely what happens in this state government inquiry. Dr. Justin Ellis is here now. Good morning.
Good morning, Jenny.
Why did you want to do work in this area, Dr. Ellis?
Well, Dan, that's a great question. So my background is in LGBTQ human rights research, and I more recently have been looking more closely at police LGBT community relations. And I started my lectureship at Newcastle University a couple of years ago. And this is a very Newcastle story in the sense that the research is funded by a local bequest, the Copley Bequest. And I think that the launch of this judicial inquiry reminds us that there are memories of pain, but there are also there are other stories that are still untold, and time is running out to capture some of those stories. Hence the necessity for this research.
So you've been interviewing local people for your work?
Yes. So we put out the call to action earlier this year, and several people have been in touch already, and they've talked really about the police gay community relationship in the 1950s, which was there was quite a lot of police surveillance during that period, but also on a much more positive note, the 1960s and 70s and the gay and lesbian involvement in the entertainment industry in Newcastle, particularly the Star Hotel. So as I said, this research project, and you pointed that out in your introduction, Dan, that there's an opportunity here to not only look at some of the less comfortable aspects of this issue, but also to look at the very positive aspects of some of these relationships in the 1670s and into the 80s.
So you're speaking to locals, and then this government inquiry is on a sort of bigger scale as well. Will one inform the other?
Well, I don't see. So my research focus is really the socio-legal aspects of these relationships, and obviously the judicial inquiry has met that judicial threshold. So I'm really looking at the social local history. I'm not sure that, that judicial inquiry will be able to subpoena people of interest. I'm not really going into the legal side of things in that much detail, and that's definitely the reserve of the courts and the police. So I'm really looking for those local stories that can. The other point, Dan, is that often LGBTQ histories are really focused on Sydney and Melbourne, major metropolitan areas. Regional and rural experiences are very often silenced because they were invisible because of the stigma associated with identifying in those ways. So I'm very much about the social and feeding back to the community these oral histories because, as I've said, time's running out to capture them.
Are those stories very different from the metropolitan stories, the regional ones?
Well, I think that the regional stories are often one of migration in the sense that there was a lot of traffic from Newcastle to Sydney. And it's interesting that now, and particularly with COVID, we're seeing a lot of traffic coming the other way of people moving out of major metropolitan areas and to the regions like Newcastle. So I think that the distinction would be that the visibility that comes with being in a regional or rural area would mean that you are less likely to disclose your identity because of the fear of the risks. But I guess we're getting closer now to for people to be able to do that in a safe way and to be able to get those stories on the record.
The people that you speak to for your research, Dr. Ellis, do they want something to come of sharing their experience? Do they just want people to hear it, or depending on what the experience has been, are they looking at restitution, or is there something they want to come of it at this point?
That is a really good question, Jenny, because we know that not everyone sees themselves either as a victim or a survivor or a victim survivor. This project is focusing on strengths-based research, so the positive dimensions and the dimensions of resilience that we can take from those experiences. And to that question, and we saw this with the Royal Commission into institutional responses to child sex abuse, some people just want to be heard. Other people, as you've rightly pointed out, seek restitution from the perpetrator. They may want to ensure that their story is recorded so that future generations can learn from their experience and to make sure that other people don't have to go through what they've experienced. And I think that given that many of these people now will be in their 60s, 70s and even 80s, then we've had homosexuality was decriminalised in New South Wales in 1984. And we know that legislation often is behind social progress on moral rights. So there's a whole teaching and learning experience that this research can provide to younger generations about standing on the shoulders of giants, I guess. It's been a very long and difficult fight. The debate over same-sex marriage brought a lot of those issues to the fore. So I think that there's a whole range of opportunities here, as Shane Mallard said, to restore some of those legacies.
Dr. Ellis, keep us posted on your research. All the best with it, and thank you.